This is the first episode of The Burning Platform as a standalone series, which will be broadcast on Podcast Party. You can go and subscribe. The links will be below the video, and then you'll get the notifications whenever we do a brand new episode. We're going to do them weekly, and my collaborators, if they'll call themselves that, are Pumi Mashiro and Canthan Pile, both of whom have been part of the show from the very beginning. Justice Malala began the show with me 10 years ago on cliffcentral.com, and we had the most incredible run for 10 solid years of being honest, breaking the barriers, speaking to everyone and anyone who's important, who matters, dealing with social, political, economic, and other interest areas for all of us, the stuff that really affects our lives. And I think that's what we're going to do in future episodes of this series as well. We've been doing a lot on the elections, and if you've missed any of those, you'll be able to find them on the Podcast Party as well. Just make sure that you are aware of all those things with some notifications and subscriptions. You can't go wrong. Here is an episode that we recorded especially as a pre-election special and to launch this brand new version of The Burning Platform. It's still The Burning Platform. We're still going to be as curious and as hard-assed as ever. And I'm sure Pumi's not going to let us down, and neither will Canthan. So all the things that you love in a neatly packaged podcast on the Podcast Party. Here's our first new episode on the new series, taking all that heritage of the previous episodes of The Burning Platform with us. And we start off by talking about what the prospects for the various parties may be in the 2024 election. And we'll begin, obviously, with that one outlier, the person who threw out all the predictions, Jacob Zuma. Over to Pumi.
And that, for what in my mind is a very old, very staid, very, very patriarchal and traditional party, he has managed to manage a career in politics that has allowed him a voice outside of just his party specific. When I see him in Parliament, he's at the chairperson of SCOPA.
He's very good at that.
He's very considered. He's very, and I think
there's a maturity about him.
I think he has been a very big influence on what the IFP on the ground in KZN has managed to do in the past couple of years. So it's resurgence with young people. It's coming back to the fore. I think he and the way he composes himself has been a big part of that. It'll be interesting to see. To see what happens going into this election, because I think that there are so many, and I've said from the very beginning, this election has many shifting sands. There's many places where everything is unsteady. And we did speak about a bolt of lightning in the daytime.
Yeah.
And MK has done that. MK has been that. And it'll be... Even as they themselves are having squabbles and a break and a disintegration, really, of who they are, it is still going to be a very destabilizing force for people going into the ballot in 2 weeks.
Well, before we move on from Koleko, I also thought that one of the things he did, which was quite a big move, and I think John Steenhuisen also admitted it, although less so, is where they made mistakes in previous elections, where they've misstepped. And I think both of those leaders realize that they, at some point in the last 20 years, their party has gone awry. And they both, in different ways, admitted that they could get back on track if they follow their North Star, which is very different in both cases. But, you know, again, the parties that we haven't heard from are almost the ones that people want to hear from the most. Not the ANC, because they don't have anything to say. And I don't blame them for not coming. What are they going to talk about? You know, if you're Cyril, what can you say that people don't already know, that we aren't bitching about day in and day out? So service delivery, electricity, education, unemployment, these are all problems that land squarely in front of the ANC's door. Why would you want to come and have to bat all of that away? And even though we didn't particularly love much of the content of what Lesego said as the spokesperson of the ANC, he was entertaining. Especially bringing up things like burning in Tlemaza, Jiba, those kinds of things. I think it was an okay for the ANC, not a bad appearance.
But look, the ANC is the incumbent. And they launched their ad last night. And they don't have to...
Did they burn any flags?
Oh, boy. We're going to get into that.
Because they are the incumbent, they don't have to say as much as the people who are trying to dislodge them from the seat. They're already sitting in the seat, okay? I know I've taken a lot of flack on the show from listeners about the fact that we complain about a lot of things with the ANC. But we have the privilege to do that because we come from our experience of government, of how they have performed, really has seen a deep deterioration. I think the past 5 years have been a train wreck, speaking of burning. Right. I think the past 5 years have
which
been
burning,
such a
trick. B-E-R or B-U-R?
I'm just saying, and Cyril Ramaphosa was a deep disappointment for some people.
Not for you, because you never had expectations.
Same here.
So,
my tweet record is standing that I would have preferred Nkosazana, and I got a lot of flack for that.
But. Which is what their ad has also done very well in highlighting. They are able to talk about a long history, and they are able to appeal to the emotions of a bigger part of South Africa that's not just us at our dinner parties with our red wine, right? On politicking each other. There are people today who have access to healthcare that they never had before. And it may be bad healthcare, but they've got access. They've got access to schooling, which they never had before. 2 days ago, we had a very interesting conversation, Gareth and I, with Dr. Badile Hotla.
Former statistician general.
Former statistician general. But looking at all of those things and looking at what priorities of South Africans are, they don't look like what they look like for us. And there are many, many, many people in this country who are sitting at home and going, so I have electricity 3 times a day
for which is far 4 hours. Than I had
and I never had it before.
Right.
I've got scholar transport to get my kids to school. There's a road. There's a mobile clinic that comes into my village. All of those things make those people go, this ANC has delivered something.
You see, an interesting point of comparison is that we are almost at that kind of inflection point. So you consider that apartheid South Africa broke off from the British Empire in 1961. So, and then from 1961 up until 1994, that's 33 years, basically.
I would say 48 was 40. More important.
Well,
with the nationalists taking over.
Yeah.
I don't think the Republic meant a huge amount.
Well, actually, it did in terms of cutting ties financially, embarking. So essentially, you are starting a new country because you're launching your own currency that's not in any way linked to that of the colonial power.
Right.
There's an entire range of things. So if you look in terms of what the nationalist government managed to achieve in 33 years from 1961 up until 1994.
Mm-hmm.
And you use that as a comparative point in terms of what the ANC has managed to achieve in 30 years in power up until now. So they've still got 3 years potentially where they could prove us wrong, assuming they still stay in power. But by every measurable standard, if you take a view around the uptick in terms of the quality of lives of citizens in general. And let's park the inequality of apartheid because that's very real and we're not going to go down that road. But was there across the board a very real uptick in the living conditions of all South Africans during that time? So the most measurable stat that I can point to is that as of 1994, there were more black people owning cars in South Africa than the rest of Africa put together.
Okay.
It's a significant figure. And if you use that in of itself as a measure around what they managed to achieve during that time versus what the ANC has managed to achieve across the board, unfettered,
so,
for all South Africans.
So this does make me think about that ANC good story to tell campaign, which was, what, 5 years ago?
Yes.
6 years ago, which seems to have been a pretty big home run for them at the time. I mean, there were obviously detractors, you know, there are people complaining about the DA's ad because suddenly they've discovered they can be outraged about the flag burning, but they didn't care about that before. This is a good narrative for them to keep putting out there. Do you think it's I mean, they certainly can't talk about building anything new, but they can say that the general standard has been raised. Like, look, we've done okay.
And so is
that an okay narrative?
I agree with Pumi in the sense that for the majority of the country, that actually has been the case. The more interesting point has been those who have seen a retrogression in terms of their standards. And if you take a look at particularly in terms of the Eastern Free State, where up until 10 years ago, they had access to running water.
Yeah.
Now they have water tankers coming in.
Yeah.
So that's actually a total reversal in terms of their living standards. You have, a filmmaker friend of mine who recently made a very moving documentary around a small village in the Eastern Cape, which basically consisted of interviewing the inhabitants of the village and talking about how their lives have changed over the past decade. And they're heartbreaking stories around, you know, the overall degradation of services that have taken place. And we also have to then contrast that with the fact that in particular parts of the country where the ANC has been removed from power, so the Mgeni municipality in the KZN Midlands is a very good example. We have a number of municipalities on the KZN North Coast that are now run either by the IFP or by a coalition between the IFP and the DA, where again there's been a significant uptick in terms of the quality of lives for people on the ground. And so there's a halo effect that then flows from that, because people in those communities are then telling their friends and family who live in other parts of KZN in particular, look, we've actually had a drastic improvement over the past period. And that's one reason why I'm very clear that for the majority of the country, that narrative is going to hold. But is there enough of a thin edge of a wedge right now, particularly in terms of what's happening in KZN? I think that we're going to see that reflected in terms of how the voting patterns go in that province in particular.
KZN, as we've seen, is also, yeah, it's a battleground. Everybody,
sure,
always knew that KZN would be a battleground. They've concentrated a lot. Almost all the parties have concentrated quite a lot of energy in terms of mobilizing people on the ground there. And what we've seen in the past 3 weeks now is fascinating for me, in that the ANC has obviously seen that they are in trouble. And they have brought out, short of wheeling them out in wheelchairs,
Thabo Mbeki.
They've brought Kalema out everyone. Motlante. They've brought Kalema. Out Kgalema Motlanthe. Yeah. They've brought Tokyo. Tokyo Sekgwale was out yesterday campaigning here in Johannesburg. Thabo Mbeki out campaigning for the party again. And all of that is also indicative of a party that's kind of going, oh dear, maybe we need to do a little bit more. But I do also want to talk about two things with regard to the campaigning over the last while, is how little the expenditure has been on all fronts.
You think so?
They have spent what we've seen before, just in terms of the volume of communication, whether it is radio, whether it's billboards, whether it's TV, and what we've seen this time around, you can see that across the board, all the political parties have financial constraints. They have not spent.
They're not spending more digitally?
No.
Because that's what's happened with all advertising, surely.
No.
You don't think so?
No.
So they're just spending less?
They're spending less. They're spending less across the board.
I tend to agree with Pumi. I think that the sheer volume in terms of advertising that we saw 5 years ago versus what we have now. I think that, you know, one of the biggest examples was the recycling of the placards that have been going up on poles. Mm. So, you know, a lot of the parties have just been using the register to vote placard still,
yeah.
You know, which were launched
a few months ago.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So they haven't been printing new material and putting it out there. So,
and it's important because it is also indicative of the fact that they have not been able to pull in as much funding as they've been able to in the past, which means that there's a lot less money going around. And
except MK clearly has a war chest. So if you look in terms of the overall footprint that they've had, you know, they pitch up, they clearly rent out stadiums. They've got lots of material that's going out all over the place. Their social media team clearly works 24/7. And all of their social media posts are, they're very focused. They use every opportunity to push Jacob Zuma in terms of talking about things that have happened under his administration. It's very different to, we have a good news story to tell.
Who do you think, and this is really for you more than for Canton and I, Pums, because you've been in marketing and branding and advertising and media for a long time, who do you think's got it most right, even if they haven't been spending as much? And who's really screwed it up?
From a low base, I think Rise and Mzansi have been surprising. They've done particularly well for a new party and in the way that they have spread themselves across all 9 provinces on social media. I haven't seen a lot of their stuff on the traditional media platforms. So I haven't seen their stuff on TV. I haven't seen their stuff on radio.
Mm-hmm.
But you can see that they had an ad agency.
Yeah.
You can see that. You can see the strategy. You can see the clarity of messaging. You can see the single-mindedness of their proposition as well. You know, they've been very consistent, very single-minded in their proposition. I think the MK has been a big disruptor. Because of the way in which they have just they've been a wrecking ball. So,
but they very clearly also have skilled advertising strategists behind theirs. I'm very clear about that. If you particularly in terms of their social media,
Only they could get some skilled people to actually run the people inside the party, because that's where they fall down horribly.
Well, that's a very interesting
point that Garrett's making.
But it's
actually
chaos, right? I mean, who are we voting for if we vote?
But who are the people within the party right now?
Well,
I mean,
it's not Jabulani.
Yeah, but it's basically
He's
Zuma,
out.
And to a large extent, you know, we actually don't know other than there have been a couple of very specific.
We know Duduzile's in.
Yes.
She's definitely.
Yes, but,
she's on the list.
Yes, but Duduzile, for some reason, managed to get his father seriously.
Yeah, he's pissed him off.
Upset about stuff, yeah. and so he's not there anymore. The interesting thing in terms of KZN, by the way, I think that what we are going to see is MK picking up a lot of ANC votes in southern KZN.
Mm-hmm.
So that's KZN South Coast, basically. I don't believe that he's going to make an impact to a large extent on the KZN North Coast, because we were already seeing those tendencies when Zuma was still president. Because remember that he lost the Nkandla municipality
to the IFP.
While he was still there. So there's this very definite north-south divide to my mind in terms of what's happening.
I didn't see that at all.
In KZN. And if you look in terms of where the ANC's current power base is in KZN, it's been these young lions that have emerged in the south that kind of just completely ripped out the underpinnings of the party structures out there. So it's going to be really interesting.
What about Stembe, do it for Schengen?
Oh, I love it.
Do you think that'll work?
I don't know if it will work, but man, you talk
Every
about...
Every time I see one, I send it to Pumi, I send her a picture.
You know, talking about consistency of messaging...
I just want to say, they've got a billboard, the IFP, trust us with your vote.
But that's what the consistency of messaging has been. So they have been consistent since 1994.
Okay, so that to me is out of all of the billboards and banners and massive posters that I've seen everywhere, trust us with your vote. It's like, okay, that now you're speaking clearly.
I mean, in their second campaign, the second national campaign, what they ran with is they ran with the line that says, "Indoda ongayethemba, a man you can trust."
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That was their campaign. And they have been consistent with the issue of trust. They have been consistent with, we are the people that you can trust. Trust us with your vote.
Okay.
Trust us to work for you. When you drive in KZN, you see the billboards for the mayors, you see the street poll ads that say, you know, that says, trust us to change your life.
So people are going to listen to this after the election and come after us for what we got wrong. So I think so far, I mean, I'm predicting we will see a small increase in IFP votes. I think we'll see a small increase with the EFF, you know, disenchanted, disenfranchised people who are pissed off with the ANC, don't like MK, but want to support Julius, because Julius is a personality. Got more personality than all the others.
I think they're going to stagnate.
You think they're going to stay where they are?
I think they're going to stay where they are.
I think we're going to see
All things else being equal, Gareth, up until the time that MK entered the fray, I would have said that there would have been an uptick for the EFF. However, now that MK is in the fray, I think a lot of the disgruntled ANC vote, which would have gone to the EFF, is now going to go to MK.
So, yeah. I love that people are going to come after us after the vote and say, yes, you got this wrong, because this is my favorite thing about polls and polling, because every time they get everything wrong. I remember when we watched Brexit, they said it wasn't going to happen and it happened. When
Trump,
we
Hillary.
Watched Trump, they said, oh, he's flash in the pan, and Trump became president. And the polls that we are seeing, depending on who you are listening to, the polls and the data that we're seeing locally, I think people are going to be crying because people have convinced themselves that the ANC is going to go down below 50. I don't think it will. They've convinced themselves that they're going to grow. I think the polls are going to get it wrong in so many ways. I think they're going to get it wrong in that the number of people that are going to turn out, I think that we're going to have a fairly good turnout. I think we're going to have a fairly good turnout.
You might remember we had the discussion on this show where I was agreeing with your point that the ANC is going to retain more than 50% simply because the number of people who will turn out is going to be fewer. But I think that MK has upended that, because I think that people who are going to turn out to vote for MK are going to turn out because they want to vote for MK. And so the overall logic that said previously that if you have fewer voters turning out, the ANC goes backwards, but it still has more than 50% of a reduced base.
Well, let's talk about the second biggest party, because they are convinced that they're going to go up. I think, in fact, you're going to see a lot of DA voters in the Western Cape going to Gayton. Maybe not enough to throw the governing of the Western Cape out, but you'll see some go. I also think they're going to lose to the Freedom Front. I think they've seen a steady dribble away from them as people have become disenchanted with the DA. A lot of their policies, some people think, are too woke. They didn't like some of the things that the DA has done over the last 5 to 10 years. They might not have liked the personalities. And they've gone further to the right. And there's only one party that's further to the right, and that's the Freedom Front. So I think you'll see some trickle there. And they're going to have a tough time. They, of course, say their internal polling shows them just shooting the lights out.
But I tend to agree. I think that the DA is going to go up in Gauteng.
Possibly in KZN.
Yeah, and KZN as well. And I think possibly the Eastern Cape as well. I do agree that I think they're going to go backwards in the Western Cape.
Hmm.
I don't believe they'll go backwards to the extent that they lose power in the Western Cape. But I do think that they are going to get a bit of a surprise in terms of that.
Let me be clear again. I mean, I've had this conversation when John Steenhuisen was in here with him. I take no joy in the DA losing
because
they're
not
competent at municipal governance. They're competent. But and I live in a city where the DA is supposedly the mayor's DA. I personally, for my place in society, don't necessarily want competent government. And this is counterintuitive for a lot of people. I don't want some party that's imposing rules left, right, and center. I quite like a bit of the ANC's chaos. That's why I don't live in Australia. That doesn't mean I don't think the DA are good or that they wouldn't do a good job, but maybe that's not what I want. You know, it's like maybe you do want a little bit of random cat among the pigeons stuff. And if you are, then again, you wouldn't vote for them.
So I think a lot of the regulatory stuff that the DA tries to come up with. So I know something that certainly ticked off a lot of people was at the point at which they said that you needed to license your solar installations.
Ugh.
And, it, you know, as a classic example of not reading the room, you know, that was absolutely the
very,
wrong thing
very
to be
stupid,
doing.
Yeah.
Oh, not reading the room. Yeah, it's self-sabotage.
Yes.
It's every time it is mind-blowing for me to watch the self-sabotage of this party. When we were with John Steyn-Naysen, it's why I asked the question of why they believe they can't win. Because they self-sabotage all the time. Even as you have their big opponent, their big scary goal is losing on every front. But they are
like,
just tripping
it's
themselves
like the Republicans
up.
In America. That they just cannot get their act together in Congress. You got Marjorie Taylor Greene saying she's going to remove the current speaker. It's like these guys just shoot themselves in the foot the
they
whole
do.
Time, right?
And I think that their internal polling is lying to them. I think when we look at it in absolute numbers, I think the DA is going to be one of the biggest losers in this election. I think they're going to be a big loser.
Let's talk about the smaller ones. We kind of mentioned Colleen, we mentioned Songezo's Rise Mzansi, but the others, Musi Maimane is talking a big game. He's like, I'm one of the four most important leaders in the country. If you only had four leaders, I would be one of them. Now, I mean, we've spent some good time with Musi in the studio, and he presents extremely well, and he's got good people in that party. Then, there's some very, very cool young people, particularly young women, who are making an enormous impact. People like them. They're going viral, so to speak, saying the right things. But I don't know whether they'll get the votes.
Oh, wow.
So I personally have not come across a Bossa voter yet. I have come across Rise Mzansi voters. Mm-hmm. I think that, particularly among the laptop class, there's a significant number of people who...
What's that laptop class?
The laptop class are those of us, you know, so count me as part of the laptop class in the sense that, you know, I pretty much work wherever I happen to be.
Mm.
You know, I have multiple places where I bid on it. I don't have to go to a 9-to-5 job. It's basically the point. And, so at that level, there are lots of people who, you know, they have the luxury of being able to work from home. And,
sure.
And they're the type of people who believe that it's wrong to actually evict homeless people from public land and that type of stuff. And I think that they have, and they believe that gun control is good as well.
Yeah.
And I think that they're finding natural allies in terms of the General Open Society Foundation messaging.
There's the refined left, and then there's the coarse left.
Yes.
The coarse left in this country is MK, EFF, parts of the ANC. The refined left is people like Rise, who would vote for them. And I'm talking about the voters now, not the parties.
Yes.
I'm trying to think about the English phrasing, and I may get this wrong, but I feel sorry. The Zulu phrasing is nyamsizela, you know. I do because
we are double geese.
yeah, because it's such a. I think Musi is going to be deeply disappointed at the end of this election. I think he's going to be deeply disappointed, and I don't and a lot of people who have supported him, a lot of people who are on his list of people are going to be disappointed because I don't think
he'll get any seats at all, or do you think?
Maybe one.
He'll get seats.
He will get a seat.
Do you think Songhezo will get one?
Absolutely.
So, look, if we use the most basic thing in terms of the changes to the election laws, which meant that the number of signatures in terms of support that you needed to get, the bar was raised significantly. If you just use that as a measure, then Razem Zanzi is definitely going to be in. Musi is definitely going to be in. Mm. If you work on the assumption that people...
But the people who signed are not necessarily the people who are going to vote for them.
Well, even if you assume that there's a 50% reduction in the number of people, if you assume that half of the people who signed in support of Musi are actually going to vote for him, then he's going to be in parliament. I'm just saying that at a very basic level. I think Musi might
make it. I think he might make it into the threshold, Musi. I don't know how many of the other people that are below him in that list are going to make it. But I do think he's going to be deeply disappointed because I think he's set himself up.
I think certainly at the level of whether in parliament he'll have sufficient influence to be able to be that decisive person who's going to make a huge difference, I think the answer is no. So Holomisa, to a large extent, is a person who does play in that space, but mainly because he's got a certain amount of credibility across all of the parties where, you know, there's a sense that he's the grown-up in the room. It's never about him.
Right.
It's but always about getting the job done.
But he understands how to politic.
Yes,
so what Bantu Holomisa knows is he knows how to politic. He knows how to get out of his office and go across the floor and talk to the politician on the other side and bring them to his side. He knows
Kuleko had that same
He knows how to quarrel. He knows if anything, he knows how to hurt the cats.
Yeah.
Bantu Holomisa knows how to do that. I don't think Musi knows how to do that. I mean, I think, as you know,
well, he wasn't able to do it as leader of the opposition, you know. So you literally are running the party that is most capable of toppling the government, and instead, what happens? You know, you're not able to get your own team on side.
It'll be interesting to see how Al Jamaa does, because Al Jamaa is in the Western Cape, and they have quite a strong base, and there's been a lot of shift and talk, particularly with regard to what's happening in the Middle East and where they stand. So I think that it's going to be interesting to see how Al Jamaa performs, because suddenly they've become a household name, because suddenly they were in the right place at the right time, and they kind of have all of... To see them here in Joburg, and we feel the way that we feel as Joburgers about Al Jamaa, about their mayor, but to see what they've done with their messaging, Al Jamaa is going to be interesting to watch at a national level and how that plays out.
You know who the smallest party in the country is? Membership of one. It's Rajbanzi's wife.
Yes!
Still there.
Yes! Uh-huh.
She's the only member of the minority front. And she's still a party.
Holding on.
I mean, she's not contesting in any real way.
But I do think we're also going to see some parties that have always been there die out. We're going to, I think the PAC, shame,
yeah.
We're going to have to say goodbye to them. I think COPE.
Yeah,
we're going to have to say goodbye to them.
I really don't know who's going to vote for COPE. Mm-hmm. I really don't. I mean, it's a totally failed experiment. Took a long time to fail, but there it is.
But I do want to highlight this about independence. And you know, from the very beginning, I've been anti the idea of independence. I've been anti the idea of changing the constitution to allow it. We have not, even in this conversation, had a conversation about independence.
Well, now's the time.
We have not been able to draw independence to come and chat with us, even over the campaign period. I think it's again going to be one of those things. We're going to look at it, and it was a mistake.
But how many independents do we have out there, Fumi? How many of them actually passed the means test to actually get on the ballot?
Well, there are quite a few. I mean, I think about Zaki Ahmad. I think about Anele Mta.
Yeah.
So
that's true, yeah.
That are sitting there. And I think here in Joburg, we've got 19.
There's Karo Charo in Durban. who's actually, he's been running a very sustained campaign, primarily on WhatsApp.
Who was he beefing with yesterday?
What's his name? Caro?
Charo.
I can't even say Charo. I don't want to say it. I feel like I'm saying something wrong.
There are other words that are not so nice. So who's he beefing with yesterday?
With the Daily Maverick.
That's right.
Yes.
He said because someone wrote an op-ed where they...
Because Daily Maverick gives a platform to someone to diss the guy without giving him right of reply or having covered anything about him in the first place, which, you know, again, is... Look, I don't want to single out the Daily Maverick again because this is kind of par for the course for our media in general, mainstream media, you know, such as it is.
By the way, I watched a debate on ENCA. We'll get back to independence in a minute, Pums, but one of their town halls, they did one in Tswane, and it was, I mean, it was chaotic because you've got all these parties and they sing and they make a noise and they won't let the other people answer. And it was mostly the ANC doing that. But I noticed that the IFP guy, who I'd never seen before, I'm not sure who he is. I wish I could name him now. But he was like the adult in the room on that one. And he was saying, and it sounds like I'm very pro-IFP in this episode, but honestly, I think we are
pro grown-ups. You know, so yeah, Corne Mulder being another case in point.
Corne Mulder, Bantu Holomisa, Nkoleko, you know, these are people who, like, you can take them seriously. They're not playing to the crowd and they're not saying popular, stupid things and being rhetoricians. They're actually making sensible points.
You remember when Max Sisulu was Speaker of the House?
Yes.
And he had that gravitas.
Right. We need more of those. So perhaps that's why. But anyway, he came across very well. And I mean, Solly did okay, Solly Msimanga, who I still think the DA underutilize. But then that's a story we can have another day. Independence, I don't know that any of them are strong enough to make any meaningful difference.
I think that here in Gauteng, there are 19. I think the third ballot, I think, has 19 independents. But there's also the issue of confusion when people get to the voting station and get their ballot papers.
Well, you've got three ballot papers.
I think that there hasn't been enough communication and education around what is different this time around and what you are expected to do. I think that is also going to create some chaos. I mean, this election,
we know exactly who Canton's voting for. Pumi and I will reveal ours on the last episode before the election.
Yeah, because we're still going to talk to people and we want them to come to talk to us and think that they can still win over our vote.
We're still going to get the EFF to believe that we might vote for them. And we've also got to decide who's definitely not in the picture, and I think we've kind of had a full go at everybody. Is there anything missing from the information that you need? Because one of the other things that I've really enjoyed in this lead-up is spending a lot of time talking to IEC people. And I'm feeling very confident. You know, if you'd asked me a year ago, do you think we'll have a free and fair election? I'd have said to you, oh, no, there's going to be skullduggery. Because you always assume that.
Really?
Well, especially because the governing party is not exactly flying high. And this is the closest they've ever come to losing outright control of government. And usually when that happens in countries, they start playing dirty tricks. But having spent time in this studio talking to people from the IEC, I really feel like they're trustworthy. And I feel like they're doing a good job. And I think it's a transparent process. And it would require the kind of skullduggery that we see in America. With mail-in votes, people voting without IDs, which we don't allow in this country.
Yes.
Rightly so. And parties not being allowed in the counting room when they're counting. Those things are part of our process. And if you doubt any of that, then I urge you to listen to the Democracy 101 episodes that we've done on those things. Well, Do you feel the same?
Yeah. Well, the thing that separates us from the rest of the continent, really, is that the significant chunk of the voting bloc happens to be in the urban areas. Which is what kind of separates us from, like, you know, just look across the Limpopo, for example, where it's impossible for any political party to make inroads into the rural areas. We've got the same thing out here pretty much. But because the majority of the populace is actually in the urban centers where you're not able to prevent people from coming in and campaigning freely. You know, as an example, in rural KZN, you could take the view that there are very definite no-go areas, some which are IFP and some which are ANC, where it will be pretty impossible for others to come and campaign. But are those places likely to be enough to make a huge difference in terms of this election? No. And also, to a large extent, as we go into the future, the rural vote becomes less significant. The trick really is to persuade more of the urban voters to actually get out and vote, which I think is the major issue that we've got coming into these elections. But yes, we do have election observers that are able to go in and observe the counting of ballots and all of that kind of stuff.
Even though the DA failed to get American election observers out here, they tried.
Well, I mean, America is not the greatest place in the world for election observers at the moment. They can't even observe their own elections properly. And
They don't even have an election observer commission like we have. I mean, I did not doubt that we would have a free and fair election. I really don't. I think that we have a solid system when it comes to how the opposition parties also behave around election observing. I think we have a solid, very solid kind of legwork in place.
By the way, we didn't mention how Ace Magashule and Bernie Ntlemeza and all of them have kind of disappeared into the sunset, right? Well, I mean,
who said to us that they think that he's going to make a difference in?
I don't
in
think
the Free
they
State.
Will, but I think that they've really absented themselves from the whole process. The other thing is, and we have to touch on this just before we close up on this conversation today, because I think there's still a lot to be decided, and there could be surprises. Do you think there's any chance at all that there could be real dissatisfaction, violence, people not conceding? I mean, KZN is such a battleground, but are either of you concerned that in any places we've seen the assassinations that have been carried out in Mpumalanga and KZN? Are you worried about that? Do you think there could be more just before the elections?
I think that they're likely to be hotspots, which has always been the case. And yes, you know, rural KZN in particular have tended to be hotspots. But the interesting flashpoints for me are going to be at the provincial level in KZN and in Gauteng in particular, because that's the two places where there's a fairly significant chance that the ANC is going to lose control of the provinces. How is that going to manifest? In Gauteng, it's really difficult for you to gather enough supporters to do that type of insurrection, for want of a better word, simply because of the overall decline in terms of the ANC's support base up here. At the same time, with a corresponding increase in the likes of the EFF support base, you know, is the EFF going to go out on the side of the ANC? I don't think so. Mm-mm. So I'm not fussed about it. I think that by and large, we're going to have a gradual shift overall in terms of the ANC recognizing, all right, you know, we lost the province now, but, you know, we've previously lost the municipalities. And there's going to be a lot of jockeying for position, and there's going to be lots of money changing hands in order to persuade people to get on board in particular coalitions. It's going to depend to a large extent on just how wide the gap is between an ANC minority and the Moonshot Pack guys together on the other side, because I think that they're going to be the significant players. And the other game changer is going to be if...
Pumi's laughing. She doesn't take this Moonshot thing seriously.
If Cyril is forced to step down as president, would that then provide an opening for the EFF to then partner with the ANC potentially? So, yeah, I think that if Cyril's not going to be president of the ANC anymore, well, of president of the country, and the ANC puts forward another candidate, is there a possibility that the EFF will support that candidate? I think yes.
I think Cyril has never been stronger in his position as the president of
the ANC?
Well,
we've had that discussion here before, but that was on the basis of money. And we've agreed that the money supply is now...
Even outside of the money issue, I think Cyril has very cleverly been able to maneuver himself in that party. I think that his position is secure. I think the fact that he has been able to pull out the kind of people that he's pulled out to come and campaign on his behalf shows exactly how secure he is as head of that party. I think that there is still a need to worry about hotspots of violence, particularly in KZN, and I do hope that there is some kind of war room thinking somewhere with intelligence, with the police in place that are closely monitoring. I've said on the show before that one of the biggest issues, I think, with some of the war talk coming out of the MK in the beginning was incredibly worrying, because they were doing the two things that we were talking about. They were attacking the referee in terms of the IEC and their credibility.
Right.
And the war talk was also very much beating the drums of saying, be ready. And what I think we must not forget is how quickly and how easily things can get out of control, like we saw in 2021. Because it actually doesn't need to be huge mobilization. It simply needs a moment of not concentrating on the side of law enforcement, a slow reaction time. Because that thing is all those people rioting and not necessarily rioting because they believe in whatever's happening. They are just taking
advantage
of what's happening. And Thabo Mbeki, 2 weeks ago, when he was doing his reflections, also spoke about that. He also spoke about that 2021 was testing the boundary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was kind of pushing.
It's like a child who behaves badly until its parents give it a clap.
Yeah, it was testing the boundary. Yeah.
Think that if a 2021 scenario happens again, the reaction is going to be very different. Because what is very clear, and I'm using all of the citizens groups that actually got together at that time and very quickly were able to put down those incursions in very specific areas. And they are now far more organized and far more heavily armed.
And the government was embarrassed by what happened and their inaction and the army's inability to get where it needed to get. So I think if they haven't learned anything and they haven't sorted themselves out.
You had civilians flying ammunition supplies to police stations.
But hence my clear use of the word lack of concentration. So it's not going to be about reaction time, but if you're not concentrating,
right,
that response time.
I'm saying that the communities are concentrating. And I tend to agree that with you that there's a fundamental incompetence in terms of our police services. I think we're all in agreement on that.
Yeah.
You know, to a large extent due to the way in which our Minister of Police operates. Mm. But in terms of people on the ground, I think that there's a far greater sense of cohesion right now.
Mm.
And it's across the racial divide. Yeah. It is a middle-class response that basically says, you know, you are not going to mess with the little bit that we've been able to build up.
Right. Okay, we're going to have to call it quits at that moment.
Oaks alive.
All right, so lots more still to come in the next couple of weeks ahead of the elections. And, of course, we'll have to do one of these after.
Absolutely.
In a special Burning Platform standalone show. You can find it all. Subscribe on the podcast party and make sure that you don't miss
an episode. And if we get our act together, maybe we can get a live.
Maybe we should do a live.
If we can get our act together, we would love to get a pre-election, get people coming in and get a couple of politicians.
Leave us comments and send us messages if you think that could be something.
But tell us if you want it, if you're going to show up.
If you want to come, maybe we'll do a live event. really get it fired up. Burning platform style. Thank you, everybody. Ciao.